Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on December 15, 2010. It is now 7 p.m., I'm sorry. Central Standard Time in the good old USA. I'm awfully sorry. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic oversized and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought and dissidents in action. You know what that means, folks? To be dissidents in action? That means we need to change the thinking, our conventional thinking, and that is so incredible, critical. This evening, we do have Andy Sutton, the chief strategist for Sutton Associates, to be our guest, and he's on the phone now. Let's get him on the line. Good evening, Andy. Is that you?
Joe Cristiano. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well, I think. I'm not sure how well I'm doing, I'll be honest with you. You have these days where nothing is right. You know, I gave actually a speech and totally lost my point in the speech, and that never happened to me before. And I've been distressed ever since. And I just noticed that even my clock on my computer is off. It says that this program is starting at 8 p.m. Central Time, but yet it started me at 7 p.m. So my computer is not speaking properly, and it says the show ends at 9:30, which means it ends at 8. So I don't know. I think my vibes are all off today or something's not right, but I'm hearing you very well. I assume that you can hear me well also, right?
I can hear you very well, so at least we know the phones are working.
Yeah, and it says that we have an hour and a half to go. Well, I think we just scheduled an hour, and I don't know where this there really is something radically wrong. In fact, the telephone numbers that show up on our switchboard only shows part of the number as well. So there's something wrong in Denmark, or the vibes are wrong, or whatever. Maybe Jupiter is not lined up with Saturn. I don't understand it. Well, Andy, it's so nice of you to be on our program again. I certainly personally appreciate the fact that you do take the time once a month, the third Wednesday of every month, to brief us and tell us really what is going on. Folks, Andy is the chief strategist for Sutton Associates, and he has a paid subscription service. And with that service, you receive a monthly newsletter called The Sensible Investor. In fact, I just downloaded it, and where is it? I have it right here in front of me, The Sensible Investor. And it not only talks about economic issues, but also investment opportunities. And Andy has been very successful. He's very conservative. And he ensures that we do have some income, even during these tumultuous times. You can also read Andy's free newsletter, My Two Cents, which I think is the best in the business, Andy. I'm not just saying that because you are on the air, but it really is the best in the business. I read every word, and I truly enjoy it, and has helped me tremendously. And by the way, I have to mention, I think I took advantage of 3 of your stock tips in your newsletter, and all 3 are doing well.
Well, that's good, and I appreciate the intro and the fine comments. You make me blush a little bit.
Well, no, it's true. You know, I mean, if it wasn't Andy and I wouldn't have you on the show. You know, I get in calls for invitations to speak on this show every single week. And really, I discount most of them because you know, I'm really not sure who they are and what they stand for. In fact, I've been burnt more times than not. So I'm very, very, very careful. And I just enjoy so much the fact that you come on the air once a week and once a month. And you do give me it's a refreshing break to hear someone else speak rather than me. Well, I guess there's nothing going on in the world of finance and money and international finance, right, these days?
No, nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. I think I think the main focus is the Metrodome right now, and that they can't play football there.
That's right.
Because apparently there was a lot of snow, and it collapsed, or part of it collapsed. Or that seems to be what's dominating the financial, not so much a financial, but the mainstream media the last couple of days. There's more going on now than ever. I don't even know where to start. I know we swapped a couple of emails back and forth about what we could talk about, and this is, it's one of those things. If you don't decide what you're going to talk about 30 minutes beforehand, it's almost like you run the risk of it not being timely enough.
Right.
But there's certainly a lot going on. I don't know. Where do you want to start?
Well, consumer spending, you know, everyone is almost getting giddy regarding this consumer spending, and it sure seems to me that people are spending money. People are spending money, but they're buying things that are on such distressed at such distressed prices that no one could possibly be making any money. In fact, I'd like to add one thing, and then I'll hand the mic over to you. The CEO of Overstock.com was interviewed on television, and it really surprised me. He says, yes, sales are up, but the only people who are buying things are those people who have plenty of money anyway, and they're buying things at a distressed price. And he says, we haven't seen the financial crisis yet. We've just kicked the can down the road. And he says, and this is the CEO of Overstock.com, believe it or not. And he said, just hold on to your hats. He says, things are going to get awfully wicked in the future. Now,
I'm going to tell you what. He is a little bit smarter than the average houseplant when it comes to this stuff. There's a background there with Overstock.com, and I'm not sure if you heard about this. This goes back a couple of years, but his was one of the first outfits that was the victim of this naked short selling, which was really dominating the headlines for a while, and you really haven't heard much about it at all in the last, year and a half, 2 years. You really haven't heard much of anything about naked short selling, but Overstock.com and their issues was one of the first stocks that really kind of got in the limelight because of this naked short selling, and they really got beat up by this. And there were many others, but they were one of the ones that that really grabbed people's attention. And that fellow, I forget his name right now, he kind of made the circuit on a lot of these, I'll call them alternative financial, economic, you know, whatever, geopolitical shows. And it was, I remember listening to a couple of them. It was pretty obvious to me that for a CEO of a regular company, generally these guys don't really understand the big picture. This fellow seemed to get it. And so that's not surprising at all that he would say something like that. And this is, this is true. I mean, you've got a situation now where stores are really having to deeply discount products to get them to move. So, and this is something I've been telling people for a while. If you're somebody that has cash and you actually are in a relatively good economic position, this is like a utopia for you.
Right.
Because all the toys that you want are on sale.
Right.
Because the dealers or whatever you want to call them, the stores, they're trying to move this stuff, and it's very hard to move things right now if you're not going to do some serious discounting. A lot of this stuff 40, 45, 50% off. And you wonder, how's anybody going to make any money in the long run doing this? But a lot of these guys claim, well, sales are up. Well, let's see what happens, when profits come around, because we have to sell things at 50% off. And if they're able to maintain profits at the same level as before with selling things for half price, then there's something rotten in Denmark.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of. Where things are at right now. I caution people on the spending data. And the reason I do that, I wrote, this was a long time ago, not that long, maybe 6, 8, 9 months, something like that, about this retail sales report that comes out. It's called the March series. And that series, admittedly, right in the first paragraph, does not adjust for price changes. So look at the price of gas, what that's done in the past couple of months. It's gone up considerably. That counts in retail sales. So people buy, let's say they buy about the same amount of gas, and they have, because we're not burning any more gas. I look at those numbers too. Gas demand is flat. I mean, it jives from week to week, But, you know, generally speaking, over the, you know, the medium term here, the last 4 to 6 months, gas demand is pretty flat. So people are not buying more gallons, which would indicate that they're taking more trips and doing that kind of stuff. But they're paying a lot more for the gallons they are buying.
Right.
And that nominal dollar amount is what goes into this retail sales report. And so, you know, an increase in the price of gas causes retail sales to go up. People get all giddy and excited and say, yoo-hoo, the consumer is back. What?
Right. They
you know, and they never talk about the fact that it's nominal. It's actual dollars that are spent. It's not units.
Right.
And if they wanted to be fair, it would be measured in units. And it would be a lot harder to do that. I get that.
Right.
But you have to understand the biases that are built into some of these reports. And I'm not saying that this was done maliciously or intentionally. That's just the way it is. And you have to interpret it with that understanding in mind. And if you don't, you're going to get led down the wrong path. And that's kind of why I like to expose a lot of this stuff, because I think people don't know a lot of times what's in these reports and the biases that are built in because of the way the reports are constructed.
You know, we have people whose disposable income is going down. It's less now than it was 6 months ago, a year ago, 18 months ago, 2 years ago. We have more people unemployed, more people chronically unemployed, and yet everyone says, well, we're in a recovery, and because the consumer is back. I'm sure that average Joe Blow finds it confusing, because I cannot make head or tails of that whole thing. Everyone that I know is reluctant to spend money, and those people who even have money are reluctant to spend money. You mean the people who don't have money are spending money? I just don't understand this anymore.
No, it's bizarre. A client of mine emailed me last weekend and said, you know, I was at the mall and it's jammed. People are shopping like crazy. He said, what's going on? I'm not seeing how this can be with everything the way it is that we know about. Unemployment's high. I mean, you just take a look at food stamp rolls. You know, food stamp rolls have gone up every month. I guess they got about an 18-month streak going now, something like that. It's been going up pretty much every month, 1.5%, 2%. So there's more and more people that are going onto these programs. You know, energy assistance usage is up. You know, all these distress programs, you could call them, you know, there's more and more subscribers to these programs each month, and yet we're being told we're in recovery. But then the kicker is, Joe, you get Bernanke on yesterday, or the other Tuesday, whatever it was, and Monday, I forget which day it was, Tuesday. I'm sorry. I'm being like you now. And they're talking about they released their minutes, and he's saying, well, you know, the economy, the recovery is not the velocity of the recovery is not sufficient to reduce unemployment. You know, I want to talk about that for a second. Think about this. Think about all the hundreds of billions, the trillions of dollars that we dumped into the saving of the financial system.
Right.
Think about the $1 trillion of this stimulus package and the debt that that's causing for ourselves and future generations. Think about another $1 trillion bill that they're trying to push through now. And then on top of that, another $1 trillion bill.
Right.
And the economy, the recovery, the velocity is not enough to lower unemployment. I told people this a year and a half ago. This is going to be a recovery. It's going to be a recovery for Wall Street. It is not going to be a jobs-led recovery,
right,
because they weren't doing anything right.
Right. Well,
and that's exactly what's happened.
Many people, well, financial people, you know, people who know a lot more than I do, are saying that really back in 2008, the monies that were pumped into the system were not meant to save the system, but were to save the banking system from collapse. But it had nothing to do with you or I, or, you know, industry or the economy in general. It was just to save those people who are within the system to become whole again and to have enough money to operate.
Absolutely. You know, all those rescue programs, the Alphabet Soup, the TARP, PSLF, Maiden Lane, 1, 2, 3, you know, whatever, All of those programs that the Fed undertook, that was all for the banks. All for the banks. I mean, we had, and, you know, and then Congress kind of got into the act, too. You know, they did a stimulus package and, you know, some other stuff. All of that, all that money, all those obligations. See, that's the thing. You know, the Fed lays out all this money. You and I pay the bill.
Right.
All those obligations that were created, and this is what we've got to show for it. And the reason this is what we've got to show for it is because it was done totally wrong, totally short-sighted, and with, in my opinion, greed and malice and aforethought in the process.
Yeah.
And that's my own opinion on that. But that's, hey, if it quacks like a duck and it walks like a duck, you know, you don't call it a pig, right?
Right. Well, you know, there are those economists who felt that the money that went into the banking system not only was to save the banking system, but the reason why they had to save the banking system because the banks are truly insolvent, and the reason why that they're not lending the money out that they lending is down slightly is because they don't want to let the money go, not because they're greedy, is because the banks are still insolvent. Is there some truth to that? And because they are still waiting for the second wave of real estate defaults to come through, plus commercial defaults. Now, can you shed some light on the commercial defaults as well that we anticipate that never came through, by the way? We anticipated that a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, let me kind of get back to the beginning of the thread there on this. Yeah, the banks are giving a lot of money. They're hoarding a lot of it. I mean, if you look at you know, the reserves that are being held at the Fed, they're huge. The Fed's paying them interest, actually, to keep their money at the Fed instead of loaning it into the economy. So there's a couple conclusions that you could possibly come to for this. The first is what you said. They're insolvent. Now, you have to remember, a bank, by definition, when we hybridize savings and loan banks, we created insolvent entities. And the reason is because if you have 10 guys and they have $1,000 at the bank, so that's $10,000, and the bank has a bunch of loans, those 10 depositors can all go in and get their money on one day,
right,
on a particular day.
Right.
The bank can't call all its loans on the same day.
Right.
So because of time preference, basically a savings and loan, as you will, is insolvent by definition.
Right.
Now, these guys took it a step further. They got into investment banking and underwriting and doing these kind of things, and they got into leveraged derivatives. They're making bets and all of this kind of stuff, and they bought all this junk, and the junk's not worth anything. Nobody wants to buy it except for the Federal Reserve. They know if they try and sell it, they're not talking about par. They're talking about 20 cents on the dollar,
right,
or 30 cents on the dollar.
Right.
But some idiot in the government, and pardon my use of the word idiot, but I really think this is the case, decided that we're going to let them, for accounting purposes, pretend that the asset is really worth a dollar instead, right, of 20 cents on the dollar.
Right, right.
So we come up with FASB Rule 157, and we have mark-to-model accounting.
Right.
So when they release their cute little 10-Ks and all this other stuff, their quarterlies and annuals, they get to tell you, hey, we're making money hand over fist, but in reality, they know that they have a bunch of illiquid assets that if they had to sell them, they'd take a bath.
Yeah.
So you could draw the conclusion that they're holding on to this money because they're afraid that, you know, something will trigger another wave of this whole thing, which is probably true, and then they're going to have to get liquid, and they're not liquid, and they're going to be in trouble, so at least they'll have reserves to draw from. The second possible conclusion that you might be able to draw from that is that what they're doing is they're waiting for a fire sale so that they can purchase shares or bonds or real estate or whatever, and they're just kind of hanging on to the money in okay, waiting for this fire sale that's going to take place after, you know, some other event, whether it's another wave of defaults or whatever the situation is. Maybe it's a sovereign debt crisis like what's going on in Europe. You know, so you could probably draw that conclusion as well. We don't really know what the reasons are right now. It could be either one of those. There might be other possibilities, too, but I think those are the two leading candidates right now.
Let me just break once, at least, for station identification. Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We're pleased to have Andy Sutton of Sutton Associates discussing the economic situation, I guess, of the world and how it affects us. Our call-in number is toll-free, 888-773-4496. I'll repeat that, 888-773-4496. If you're calling on a cell phone, you want to call direct. Some of you people know we have that direct number, and that's 646-652-4620. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Please make use of it, and please do call in, and don't be bashful. People tell us, and they say, I would have called in. However, I didn't want to interrupt Andy or something like that. I said, no, please do call
interrupt
in.
Interrupt,
please interrupt Andy. Now, what about these commercial loans? I'll tell you what I do. I take my own surveys. Whenever I go shopping with my wife, my wife goes into a store, and I count the stores and how many, what I call holes, you know, how many stores are vacant. And that seems, in my very, very small sample, to indicate that there are more empty stores today than there were last year. Is this true everywhere? And they had projected that this commercial real estate bust was going to go several months ago, and really nothing happened. You have any idea what happened there?
Well, here's the situation, and this is what I think is going on in the commercial market, and I think it mirrors what's going on the residential side. I've had people email me. I've talked to people who are behind on mortgage payments, and under normal circumstances, they would have already been foreclosed upon. But here's the deal. The banks are sitting there saying, all right, we've already got X number of properties that are already in foreclosure, and we can't get what we need out of them. So what they're telling people is, if you can pay $200 a month on an $800 mortgage, then pay $200 a month on an $800 mortgage, and we're not going to foreclose. Uh-huh. Or if you have a $3,000 mortgage, you can pay $500 a month. You know, just pay us the $500 a month, and we'll take that, and we won't kick you out and all that kind of other good stuff. Because they're looking at it this way, at least they're getting $500,
right,
or $200, or whatever the situation is.
Right.
I personally know of a number of people that are in that precise situation. I have a feeling that the exact same thing is going on the commercial side, and this could be another reason why banks are holding all of these reserves. You know, kind of to use that to work off, if you will, the fact that they have all these loans that aren't performing.
Right.
So
yep.
I think the government has pretty much directed a lot of these institutions, to whatever extent the government is able to do so, maybe incentivized is the better word, to try to reduce foreclosures a little bit, because, you know, when you start seeing a lot of foreclosures, that creates bad sentiment. You know, I really think right now this is a confidence game, and the emperor has no clothes. Humpty Dumpty has fallen off the stone wall, and he's laying there in a million pieces, and you've got a bunch of bureaucrats that are trying to figure out where the super glue and the rubber bands are, and they can't, and they have no clue, and so we're just going to try and keep up appearances, and like that fellow said, we're going to try and kick that can down the road just another month or another 6 months or another quarter or whatever the case is, and try and keep this thing from, you know, totally coming unglued, because that's the way it seems the direction is going. If you want a better understanding of what's likely to happen here, just take a look at Europe. And that's only because of sovereign debt. They don't have all the other structural problems that we have.
Yeah.
So people need to keep that in mind also.
Well, this holiday season doesn't seem like it's going to pan out to be a very profitable one, albeit although many sales are being made, but like we say, people will buy only if it's 90% off. What's going to happen if it's really not a banner holiday season, and these retailers move into January and February, and the real world hits? This is when their sales just plummet. And they had to rely on all the big profits, which weren't there in December. It just seems that everything we are doing, we're just piling it up higher and higher and higher. And eventually, you know, the weight of this whole thing is going to make the whole system collapse. Am I just a doom and gloomer, or am I thinking crazy or what?
Well, you know, it's like a spring. You know, we keep putting more and more weight on the spring to try to hold it down. And eventually, you can't push it down anymore, and it just kind of lets loose.
Yeah.
It may not happen like that. You know, I think if you get a bad report on the sales for the last month or so, you know, you might see a couple retailers go belly up. You know, file for Chapter 11 or something along those lines. You know, maybe a few more commercial loans won't get paid. Situations like that. And we've got quite a few holes here too. You know, and you go into, you know, shopping centers and that kind of stuff. And there's foot traffic, but, you know, there's not, people aren't breaking the doors down. And it seems like the sale items are the things that are selling. So, I mean, I'm seeing pretty much the same kind of thing around here that, you know, that you reported. I'm not totally convinced that, you know, these retailers are going to be able to make an awful lot of profit when they're selling stuff at 50% off.
Right.
I mean, the typical markup is nowhere near that. So
right.
This is going to be interesting to see how the profit season plays out when the fourth quarter numbers come out and those types of things. I think what you're going to probably see is even more discounts you know, after the first of the year, because they're going to try and keep the foot traffic going into the stores and that kind of stuff, and they're trying to sell stuff online, you know, that sort of thing, you know, deep discounting, online sales, coupons, you know, all of that kind of good stuff. Again, if you're one of those people that's sitting around and, you know, you've got money, you know, you couldn't ask for much more. But unfortunately, you've got a lot of people that are still on unemployment. You know, people are able to find jobs in certain areas, but it seems like from what I've been hearing, that most of it is, you know, if you're skilled labor, that seems to be okay in certain areas.
Right.
But if you're just, you know, general employees, you know, that kind of thing, you know, not a lot of specialized experience, things like that, it's very difficult to find work at much more than maybe, you know, $8.59, $10 an hour, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I was listening to the National Inflation Association. They mentioned that revolving credit has fallen $10 billion. Home equity lines of credit has fallen $2.6 billion, while wages are falling. And so they're saying, where are all these sales coming from?
Yeah, I mean, this is a again, we're back into the government reporting situation again. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, they're absolutely right. You know, if not, you know, real wages are stagnant, and we know that much of the boom over the past 10 or 15 years has been on the back of credit,
right.
And credit is contracting. You know, where are all these sales coming from?
Right.
Is it a few, you know, billionaires out buying, you know, massive yachts or something like that that's skewing it from the top? Unfortunately, we don't know that, because it's very difficult to track these things. I mean, you can, you know, certainly go in the NAICS categories, you know, and look at luxury items and jewelry and staple goods like foods, beverages, you know, gas, that kind of stuff. You can break that down. You know, and that's one of the things that, you know, I try to do in the newsletter every so often, is try to give people a picture, you know, where the activity is coming from. But when you look at it at face value, it really doesn't make a lot of sense. It's like so many other of the series that are out there now, you know, the unemployment series, you know, just different things like that. A lot of it just does not make any sense. You know, again, I think what you would see if you were actually able to cross-section this is that you're seeing, you know, upper middle crust and upper-class folks that are doing most of the spending, you know, maybe 30% of the population, 25% of the population is doing 75 or 80% of the spending. I kind of suspect that's what you would find out if you were able to cross-section this.
Yeah. I also read an interesting article talking about the job shift here in the United States. One graph showed the number of jobs in mining, and the number of jobs in mining is approaching the peak levels of 2008, and showing that what we're doing is we're reverting back to an economy of 100 and some odd years ago, where we're going back into mining because, you know, we need the elements, we need the energy, the coal, etc., you know, to make things run, and also we can export that. And they made a point of saying that we we're seeing a total job shift. You know, one time it was away from mining and into high tech. Now, I mean, we still have high tech, obviously, but we see more out of manufacturing, for example, and more into the mining process. And in other words, we're reverting back to where we were 100 years ago. I thought that was an interesting case.
And that's a good thing. That's going away from, you know, the consumption mentality towards the production mentality.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with this whole thing with China. There's a lot of, you know, hostile rhetoric that's going back and forth between Washington and Beijing right now. And obviously the Chinese have a good deal of control over our destiny because we've given it to them. It's going to be interesting to see if our government maybe would have kind of a change of heart with regards to maybe engaging in a little protectionism, and I know that's a bad word, I'm not supposed to say that, and trying to foster some growth in manufacturing and trying to, you know, rev up some of these sectors in our economy that are more geared towards production than consumption.
Yeah.
That would be a step in the right direction, because once you are able to start becoming self-sufficient in certain things and having residual, you can export the residual, and that by definition is going to help to, you know, lower trade imbalances.
Right.
It's going to help to work on the current account, and that sort of thing. So, I mean, those are all good activities. We need a lot more of that.
Right.
Just mining isn't going to do it.
We
can't poke a hole in every acre in the whole country. It's just not practical, but we need to be doing that in a whole bunch of areas.
Right. Let me just take a second just to pause for station identification one more time. Folks, my name is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host for Liberty Talk Radio. We have as our guest Andy Sutton, Sutton Associates. He's the chief strategist, and we're talking about economic issues. We do ask that you call. We have a direct line of 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. For those who wish to call toll-free, it's 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Do call. Do not be bashful. You'll not interrupt us. We'd love to know what's on your mind, and we'd love to answer your questions. You can also send us an email to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Thank you. Andy, we hear we need manufacturing again. We need to bring the jobs back. In order to do that, what do we need to do?
Well, the first thing we need to do is, at the government level, we need to create an economic environment that's going to sustain manufacturing. You know, we have to look at the reasons why all these companies left and why we got deindustrialized and basically reverse those processes. You know, and for as much as people love those free trade agreements, they really didn't do us any favors
right.
in terms of manufacturing. The problem is, if you're going to do this, you're going to build a factory here and you're going to say, we're going to make, household plastics or whatever, you know, like the stuff that they sell at Kmart and Walmart, and it's all made in China. We're going to do that here. You're going to have to pay American workers, you know, whatever the wages plus the cost of the product and, you know, reasonable profit, yada, yada, yada. The price is more than likely going to be higher
right.
because of the difference in the standard of living from here to China and things like that. So right away, a lot of these domestic goods, and that's not the case in every instance, but in a lot of cases, you'd be running at a price handicap. You'd be at a disadvantage. Now, people will buy American. You know, there is that
right.
idea of, you know, national pride and that kind of thing. And, you know, to a certain extent, people will do that. But if the gap is too big, and especially if people are in distress economically as it is, they're going to say, you know what, I'd love to do this, but I can't. I have to buy what's cheap.
Right.
So that's where the government can step in, and they can say, hey, China, guess what? We're going to put a quota on this, or we're going to put a tariff on that. The problem with that is China can say, oh, well, all right, we're going to start selling bonds.
Right.
You see, this is the problem. We've given away so much of our wiggling room, so much of our flexibility to them. And it's not just them. We're beholden to OPEC, the Japanese, you know, all of these different places where all this vendor financing went on over the past 20, 25 years. All of a sudden now, we can't just say, hey, you know, we're gonna build our own plastic here, and you know, we don't need you anymore. We're gonna tariff you. You know, they can make us hurt for that. So, and the thing is you don't just build a plant overnight. It takes years, you know, to design it and do all that kind of stuff, build it, logistics, you know, distribution, get everything going. It takes a long time. So it's not something that can happen overnight,
right.
But it's something that can happen, you know, over time. It's something that we could be starting. It's something that we could be looking at. And maybe we could look at doing more things that maybe the Chinese don't, you know, send things in for, you know, the certain goods, you know, that come from other areas where maybe
right.
we haven't given away all of our leverage. We could start to reclaim those areas first.
Right.
But I don't see us doing that yet. I mean, yeah, the mining is going on, and that's, you know, a lot of that is a function of the fact that, you know, I think a lot of these guys are expecting hyperinflation. They're expecting higher commodity prices.
Right.
They understand the dynamics of a growing global aggregate demand, whether the U.S. is partaking or not. They understand the fact that, you know, the U.S. is not the engine of economic growth anymore, and they know that these goods are going to be needed, and they know that these materials are going to be needed, so they're going after them. And I think that's really what you've got going on there, but that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. I mean, it's certainly, you know, it's good that we're able to do that again. But, you know, that's kind of where, you know, one of the places where we could start maybe.
Right.
Is mining.
Yeah, well, you know,
start to reclaim some of these other areas.
Yeah, the in this article it mentioned that, you know, you can't export a mining job.
Nope.
You can't export that to India or China. I mean, you got to do that here. But that also, in perceptionally, that also is a job that we've considered to be a almost a third world country type job, you know, mining. And it's something that we, you know, we don't do here anymore because we're not going to dirty our hands. We're beyond that. And that mentality, I think, exists somewhat in our culture.
Sure it does. Yeah, we need to lose that.
Yeah.
We need to lose that big time. It seems like, you know, I'm not trying to stereotype, but it seems a lot of, especially the younger generations, my own included, they don't want to get their hands dirty.
Right.
You know, they won't crawl under a car. You know, they won't take apart a lawnmower. You know, or something like
right.
that. You know, those are just silly, you know, household examples. But you know, they don't want to do those things. You know, if somebody doesn't want to do that, what do you think the chances are of getting them to go and work in a factory? You know, it's we need a mental attitude adjustment as well. This is not just an economic thing. You know, you have to understand economics is kind of the sum of human decisions. You
right.
know, yeah, it's the allocation of scarce resources, but, you know, it's human decisions that go into dictating how those resources are allocated. So, you know, human nature plays into this.
Right.
You know, the psychological makeup of a society plays into this a lot. And if you have a society that is used to hard work, you know, you take the Japanese, for example, you know, they're very hard workers. The Indians, very hard workers. The Chinese, very hard workers. And then, you know, we've kind of gotten lazy, you know, over the past 20 or 25 years or whatever, as a nation. You know, we need to change that. We need to, you know, snap out of that. And maybe, you know, maybe the Overstock fellow's right. And, you know, there's going to be a real kick in the behind here. And maybe that's what gets us moving. I don't know. But, you know, we also need a mental attitude adjustment as well as economic and geopolitical adjustments.
There's someone who wants to ask you a question. It's someone that I know very, very well, and here she is. Caller, you're on the line.
Hello.
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 I'm Aaron Cristiano. I'm Joe Cristiano's wife.
I guess you know him. I guess you know him pretty well, then.
I do. Nice to talk to you, Andy.
Talking to you.
One of my questions has to do with my concern that I view America as you mentioned before, kind of beholden to a lot of foreign interests. China, obviously, the Middle East for petroleum and such products. And it seems to me that if I were one of those countries that has bought a lot of our bonds and has a lot of interest in whether or not we are going to maintain our status in the world, that they would be kind of worried looking at us at this point in time. And I wonder how long we're going to be able to, you know, as you said, keep the facade up until, I mean, you know, kicking the can down the road until one of these entities or groups kind of calls our bluff.
Well, I think that's already been happening, really. I mean, you take a look at just what the Fed has had to do here over the past year or so. They've had to openly come out and pledge to monetize government debt. And, you know, this last figure, $600 billion, it's more like a trillion, but, you know, with a few hundred billion between friends. Other people used to buy that. Other people used to pick that up. And we're getting to the point now, and our government is clueless. They don't get it. They want to keep spending, and they want to keep spending and running big deficits and doing all of these types of things. Foreigners aren't picking up that tab anymore. So what you're doing is you're kind of seeing it move into the next phase where the foreigners are saying, you know, you don't hear China or Russia or OPEC or Japan or anybody saying, hey, you know, we really want to figure out how we can buy more U.S. government bonds. Everybody's talking about divesting and diversification. I haven't heard anybody talk about buying more. Everybody's trying to figure out how to get out
right.
without losing their shirt. So, you know, I think, you know, as far as, you know, what you said there with them calling our bluff, you know, it may not be an instantaneous thing, but it certainly has been a gradual thing, and our bluff is being called. And the Federal Reserve is they're going to step up now, and they're going to monetize, and, you know, we knew that was going to happen. And, you know, this is going to be one of those things where, you know, they create a lot of problems with that now. So, you know, it's kind of moving into the next phase of this whole thing.
What do you think about I understand there's an agreement between China and Russia to kind of abhor the dollar.
Yep. Yeah, they cut a deal a couple of weeks ago that they were going to use their own currencies. And I just saw an update on that. Apparently they're going to use mostly the Chinese currency. But, yeah, for trade between the two of them, they're not going to use dollars anymore. So, you know, they're trying to get away from this. Everybody's trying to figure out how to get away. You know, China and Venezuela have cut quite a few deals. China's cut deals with Middle Eastern countries. They're trying to lock down supplies of strategic resources that they need to run their economy, petroleum, copper, you know, those types of things. You know, and they're trying to do it, you know, in the absence of the dollar. So people are understanding what's going on here. It's not that, you know, the Chinese are dumb and, you know, they just keep buying all these bonds. You know, they know what's going on, and they're trying to do it slow, and they're trying to be gradual about it. Because, I mean, let's be honest, they do have huge holdings in government bonds. I mean, they own a good portion of this country because of that. We have to keep that in mind.
So is the joke going to be on the American public that are too stupid to keep track of all this?
Well, I would think so eventually. I mean, you know, the people that have the knowledge are going to have the power, and the people that are ignorant are going to be left holding the bag. I mean, that's generally the way this thing kind of works. So I don't see it well working out too well for people who've been either, you know, just ignorant because of, you know, whatever, or have been willfully ignorant where they just refuse to, you know, engage common sense and engage the facts that are being presented by, now it's many, many, many people. I mean, you know, 5 years ago, there was a handful of us that were screaming about this stuff. Now it's kind of picked up a lot of momentum, which is good. People that still refuse to get on board and at least take a look at it. Yeah, I don't see it ending too well for them. I don't know if that answers your question on the whole situation with China.
Well, it's a good start. I'm always worried about the big thing that's going to, you know, just like pop the balloon and make suddenly a big change. But you don't feel that there's going to be that kind of a crisis, but rather just sort of a trickling down of the cooperation that we've received from other countries over the years in terms of, you know, them purchasing our paper and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
we've already had a you know, winding down of that phase of cooperation. I would not sit here and say, well, I don't think there's going to be a crisis. I mean, I think we're one headline away from being in the same boat that Greece is in, just because of the fact that our fundamentals are rotten. We're over-leveraged. We're in debt. You know, our economy is stagnant. We have a huge welfare state. I mean, it's really, when you take a look at, you know, what's been hampering a lot of these European countries, we've got kind of the same thing going on here, you know, in a magnitude of 10. So whether it's a bank that goes down or whether somebody pulls the plug or, you know, whatever the situation might be, you know, it could be a rogue trader does something stupid and causes this thing to get going. I mean, I don't know. There could be 1,000 different triggers. And there might not be any triggers. I mean, it might be one of those things where it does just work itself out and work itself down and unwind slowly until we get to this point where, you know, we reach the end game of this whole thing. And the thing is, the Chinese are going to want to get paid. OPEC is going to want to get paid. The Japanese are going to want to get paid. And what I'm afraid of, you know, and Joe and I were talking about this uptick in mining here, is that all of a sudden we have to give away some of those national assets to satisfy these debts.
Right.
You know, and I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility at all, that we would have to do that.
Sounds worse and worse.
See, honey, things aren't all that bad. They're worse than bad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it sounds like to me. Well, thanks, Andy.
Yeah, okay. You're welcome. I hope I didn't upset you.
I'll try to hang on.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate that.
Okay.
She gave
bye.
Me bye bye. She gave me a little bit of a break. She gave you a little bit of a break, I guess. A little change of pace. You know, if we had to.
I feel bad now.
Why? Why do you feel bad?
Well, I upset her.
No, you didn't upset her. Don't worry. She listens to me all the time, 24 hours a day, and I'm talking about this.
Sorry, that's true.
You know.
That's true.
I mean, she's...
You might be more of a doom and gloomer than I am.
Well, you know, I you know, people say that, and I go, well, will you just stop that? You know, I said, I'm trying to be a realist. I try to look at things. I look around me, and I say, you know, it's fortunate for the people around me that they don't know what I know, because at least they're in a better mood than I'm in. I mean, really, it's unfortunate in that, you know, ignorance is bliss. And then they go around listening to the mainstream media and they say, oh, things are getting better and everything is fine. And, you know, we're on an upswing and it takes a long time, but we're going to make it. But no one's looking at the real picture. No one's looking at the facts and figures. No one wants to know, because as soon as you look at the facts and figures, you're a doom and gloomer. And I don't want to know namby-pamby stuff. I don't want to know hope and of optimism. And I want to know, show me the money. Where is it coming from? Where is it going? Germany, for example, I understand has had two unsuccessful bond offerings. This is Germany now has unsuccessful bond offerings.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, this is the thing. You know, and here is... Talk about the baby getting thrown out with the bathwater. Germany has been carrying the EU for all intent and purposes for the foreseeable past. And frankly, I think they're sick of it. I know the German people are sick of it. You know, I have some people in Germany that I email with occasionally, and they're pretty fed up. And I think that generally is the sentiment over there. But now they're having problems doing what they need to do. And this is how these things work. And this idea that, you know, America is immune and America is entitled not to have to deal with this is just absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
And you're right. As soon as you start talking about this stuff and you talk about the fact that we have this fiscal gap that's 14 or 15 times GDP and all of this kind of stuff, as soon as you start doing that, yep, you're a doom and gloomer.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Let's pass out the tinfoil hats and the dismal science books, and we'll get down to work.
Yeah. What do you think near term is going to happen in with the Euroland?
Well, you know, this is the thing. You know, we had this crisis that jumped out here about 8 months ago in the spring, and you know, there was all this this fear and panic, and you know, the bond market got roiled, and this got rumbled, and that got kicked around. And they kind of papered it over, and they came up with this $500 billion emergency fund and all that stuff. And that was supposed to be good enough. That was going to fix the problem. That was going to go away. And the media stopped talking about it. The problem never went away.
Right.
They didn't fix anything. It's just like here, you know, printing up $500 billion and calling it problem solved, you know, let's, go shopping.
Right.
That's not fixing anything.
Right.
That's just kicking the can down the road, and that's exactly what they did. And because of that, it popped up again. And they're trying to do the same thing now. Well, how are we going to handle this? You know, for all intent and purposes, Joe, they want to bail this whole thing out without saying that they're bailing it out.
Right.
Because they don't know how to do anything else. Or they don't want to do anything else but just do more and more bailouts. And what they don't understand, a lot of these people in these countries that are screaming for their, you know, age 55 or 58 or whatever it is, retirement ages, and all these other programs, is that you guys already lost a good bit of your national sovereignty when you went into that European Union to begin with.
That's right.
You're going to lose the rest of it because of this nonsense, these silly social programs that you can't afford, and these bailouts. And what do you think's going on here? The same thing.
Well,
we are giving away our national sovereignty because of this.
Well, I think Ireland, the people in Ireland, had it right. They said, look, we can't pay it. You guys bought our bonds. You got interest on the bonds, and that was the risk.
Right.
You know, that was a risk factor. And we can't pay it. You know, eat it. I mean, that's the way it goes. We can't pay it. Sorry. You know, write it off, and we'll just continue on. And that's what should have happened. At the same time, Ireland could have said, not only that, but you can get your dirty euro pieces of paper off of this, you know, off of this island. We're going to print our own money, and ended it all. Now, they would have had a sort of debased their own currency when they printed it, but at least they would have had a starting point and preserved their own sovereignty. They sold their soul to the devil at the same time, solving the problem.
Exactly. And that's what the rest of the people in Europe are just begging for right now. The French, the Italians, the Portuguese, all of them, Greece. Every one of them. They want their social programs. They want their 10 weeks of vacation. They want their retirement at age 55. They want their national health care. They want all this nonsense. They know they can't pay for it. Or maybe they don't know they can't pay. Maybe they still haven't figured it out. Some of them know they can't pay for it. They want it, and they don't care what they have to do to get it. And you're right. They'll sell their souls to the devil himself to get it.
Right.
And that is exactly what is going to happen here. You know why? Because we're humans, they're humans.
Right.
Human nature doesn't change. People don't like to have the boat rocked. They want the boat to stay straight. You fix it. We don't care what it takes. We don't care what we have to give up 20 years from now, because we don't care. We want it now.
Right.
That's the way people are today. So I can tell you without any doubt, the same thing is going to happen here. What do you think is going to happen if we get a Congress or we get a president at some point that stands up and says, hey, guess what? You're not going to be able to retire at 65. You're going to be able to retire at 75.
Right.
That and that deficit like... commission, that's one of the recommendations. Kick
right.
that retirement age up.
That's right.
You think people are going to like that?
Yeah.
People are going to start screaming. You tell the guy who's getting Social Security benefits, hey, you know, you're taking a 50% hit. Or you tell the kid just out of college, hey, instead of, you know, 7% and change, now it's going to be 20%. You think that's going to fly? It's not. We can't afford it. The system itself is unsustainable. And as if that wasn't bad enough, in the case of Social Security, the government stole the money. They stole the money out
that's
of the
right.
trust fund.
Exactly.
Put it in the general fund and blew it.
Right.
So that never had a chance to begin with. They've known about this for 20 years. Nobody did anything, and now all of a sudden it's a big surprise that there's
right.
going to be a problem. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the reason they get away with it is because people don't care. People aren't informed. I'm sorry, I'm talking too much here.
No, go ahead. Go on. You're singing my tune. But
I mean, seriously, people don't care. They're into whatever they're into, and
right.
they're not paying attention. And this is what happens when you have a public that becomes lazy.
Right.
You know, freedom. Liberty, those things need to be defended. You need to be vigilant. You need to stay on top of your government. As soon as you get lazy about it, guess what? Your government runs roughshod over you.
Right.
People of America, it's time to wake up.
Right, right. You know, my progressive friends, and I have plenty of progressive friends, more than I like to count, but you know, they always bring up, look at France. Look how wonderful it is in France, where people get, you know, 12 weeks, whatever it is, vacation a year, and they all go down to the Riviera, and they all get paid, and you know, life is, the quality of life is so much better there, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and now look what's happening in Europe is that they can't compete anymore, and then they're cutting these social programs, and now people are taking to the street. Well, you, I used to tell
That's
them
right.
that. I said, I don't know about France, but it's not sustainable. You can't be competing in a worldwide economy while lying on a beach in the Riviera, while people in
That's
Asia
right.
are working 12-hour days, 6 days a week. You're not. It's not going to happen. You know, and they, oh, no, we have the wrong mentality. They have the right mentality. I said, they're going to sink. You've got the right mentality, but you're going
to
sink.
Well, you know, look how well it's working out for us, because we're trying to be like the French.
That's right. And instead of being,
I mean, really,
more,
we're
yeah.
certainly not, we're certainly not trying to emulate the Asians.
That's
we're
right.
trying to emulate the Europeans, and look how well that's working out.
Yeah, you know,
every family share of this ridiculous debt is, I don't know, $300,000. Or whatever it is today. I mean, that's insane. That's another house. That's another mortgage.
Yeah. You know,
and that's not even the real debt. That's just the $13 trillion that they're willing to admit.
Right.
That
absolutely.
Doesn't count what's coming up the pipeline here, yeah. because we haven't bothered to fix any of this. That's freedom. You're walking around with an albatross of debt, like hanging like a millstone around your neck. That's freedom. That's ridiculous. People need to wake up. I'm sorry. I'm getting excited.
I know. I get mad too. Well, you know, my industrial company would we go to factories, and the number one problem in factories is you can't get anyone to work because the work is below everyone, and everyone thinks that they should have a better job, and they're not going to work the hours and whatever, you know, the shifts and whatever. But that's what everyone else is doing around the world. But yet they want more factories to come in here. Well, they want to come in here, but the people don't want to work the jobs in the factories. I mean, and that's
yeah,
why
right.
some of them
yeah,
have 90% of their employees don't speak English.
That's right.
That's it.
you know, the government lies most of the time, but I don't know if it was Bush or maybe it was Obama or maybe it was both of them. You know, said that, you know, I think they said it about the Mexicans. You know, they do the jobs that we're not willing to do. You know what? Whoever said that was right.
Absolutely.
Because you're not going to find a lot of Americans that are going to sit out in a field and pick strawberries.
That's right.
Or watermelons or lettuce or whatever the case is. Everybody thinks they're above doing that. And I'll go on the record right here. I would take a factory job.
Oh, I would have no choice today
but to
take a factory job. Andy, I don't know how much time.
You know what? When I was a kid, we had a steel company back in Bethlehem, and it was a pretty big one. And
that was
going to be my employer. And I was going to work there like my dad and my uncle.
Yeah.
And my dad was a smart man. He is a smart man, I should say. And told me, hey, you might want to consider going to college and getting smart, kid, because this place isn't going to be around.
Right.
And he was absolutely right.
Yeah. And the unfortunate part now is that going to college is not your best bet these days because there are not enough jobs
not.
To absorb all these college degrees, especially those coming out with sociology degrees and whatever, which are,
yeah,
they can
exactly.
find nothing.
Well, they're waiting tables.
Right, exactly.
They're waiting tables, yeah. And that's a whole other topic for a whole – but it gets back to the mentality
right.
again. You know, we have this mental paradigm – of the way we think things are and the way we think things ought to be, and we're not willing to revisit it, and it needs to be revisited, and that's going to be the engine for really getting things turned around, if things are going to get turned around.
Right.
People are going to have to want it.
Right.
They're going to have to demand it. They're going to have to really hold the government's feet to the fire to get it. You know, in one little election, yeah, running out some people, I mean, that's a good thing, but now, are people really going to hold their feet to the fire for what needs to be done? We'll see.
Yeah. Now, look what we've done with the unemployment compensation, that we're extending it another 13 months. What was interesting, 13 months brings it to January. So when it comes up again next year, they don't have to make the decision in December during the holidays. Like, you know, like they pulled a wool over our eyes. But you know what the problem with that whole situation is? Is that we've diverted the attention, the attention to the real problem by saying, well, it wasn't their fault, you know, that they don't have a job, thus we shouldn't penalize them. Well, we shouldn't be concentrating on fault. If we are going to concentrate on fault, we should find out who is at fault and get the money back from them so that we can revitalize our economy, which I know is not possible. But we extend it because we change it from whether or not it's morally or ethically or economically correct to do so to fault. And since it's not their fault, then we have to extend it. It makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense at all from an economic point of view, a moral point of view. And we are just going to... We should have an unemployment program that says this. You get unemployment compensation provided that you don't have a job. Right? I mean, you could just think of that. There wouldn't be five people working in the United States. And this is exactly what we're doing. Anyway, I'm sorry for my diatribe. Andy, our hour is up. Would you like to close with any closing remark and give us some more information about where they can find you, et cetera?
Well, I want to make a comment first about what you just said there with unemployment. And, you know, while we certainly don't want people to starve in the street, we have not bothered to look at the reasons why these people don't have jobs and correct the things that need to be corrected to create an environment where they can have a job.
Right.
So instead of saying, all right, you know, this piece of legislation, that piece of legislation, the other piece of legislation, these were bad ideas. And these were you know, contributarily or whatever, responsible partially or in their entirety for, you know, this number of people being out of work. We're going to repeal these pieces of legislation, and we're going to try and create an environment where people can have a job. And whatever we need to do to accomplish that, we're going to do it. If we need to spend some money and build a factory and repeal a trade agreement, then that's the way we go. If we need to figure out a way to back away from this country so we can produce these goods, you know, domestically and do that, then that's what we're going to do. We've done none of that. What we've done, Joe, is we've fostered dependence on the government.
Right.
All of these people that are on food stamps, getting unemployment, all of these programs are dependent on the government. And when you have a culture of dependency, who is really going to want to go out and work? And I've heard people say this. I hope I get laid off so I can sit at home and collect unemployment because I don't feel like working. I have heard people say this. This is the culture that the government is, you know, pushing, if you will, by doing these types of things.
Yeah.
It's not, hey, somebody's down, let's give them a helping hand, let's get them back on their feet. It's, hey, you're down, we're going to put a boot on your throat and keep you down. We'll give you a few saltines and a couple of glasses of water every so often so you don't die on it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what we've got going on here now. And that, you know, does not help with a mental attitude adjustment in terms of getting things turned around. You know, America, we have an attitude problem.
Right.
We think we're entitled. We have this entitlement mentality. Everybody's entitled to this, that, and that. The college thing. You know, so many things. You think about it. You know, don't get mad at me. Just think about it. And that's really what needs to be corrected first, because otherwise there's not going to be any energy or any will to demand something different. I mean, that would be my comment on that.
Yeah.
Joe, I appreciate you having me on. You really gave me a nice intro. I'm not going to really add anything to that except to tell people if they want to get in touch with me, they can find me at our website. It's www.sutton-associates.net. Or they can give me a call here at the office. It's 888-633-5420. We just put out December Sensible Investor, and we've got a pretty solid interest rate model that we're proud of. I've been working on it for about 4 years now, and it's made some really accurate calls here of late. So I would just encourage people, if that's something that interests them, to check that out. Thank you for having me on.
Well, Andy, I hope you will accept our invitation to continue the third Wednesday of every month to be our guest.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. All you need to do is rattle my cage a couple of days in advance and remind me, because the time seems to fly away here. But as long as you'll have me, I'll be here.
That's super great. I certainly appreciate it. And if I don't speak to you beforehand, please have yourself a very, very nice holiday.
I will, Joe. You too. All right. Take care.
Good night. Well, folks, that was Andy Sutton. And he is just terrific. In my opinion, he is the very best. And everyone should take advantage of his newsletter and his website. His newsletter is free. You can just get a flavor of what he does, which is terrific. And it's called My Two Cents. And you can go to his website and just subscribe to it. He doesn't bug you with any advertisements or anything. Believe me, he's clean. None of this garbage, you know. So anyway, this is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Ranch Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at area code 918-749-7711. That's 749-7711. Call them for your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government's like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ain't no fun, folks. Ron Paul has a sign at his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.